Hey again, everybody. John Porteous of the Lovells Township Historical Society here, and you're listening to the Backcast Podcast. Welcome back. Hey, good fun for you this week. Hope you enjoyed our last episode with Glenn, and in the spirit of getting ready for Grouse and Woodcock opener, which is just a little over a week away, we'll have the opportunity to sit down with a retired veterinarian, Dr. Paul Misak. So rather than me ramble on, let's get to it, and we'll have Richard introduce you to Paul.
Good morning, it's Richard and John. Today we're talking with Paul Misak, a retired vet from Grayling. Anybody in this area probably doesn't really need an introduction for Paul. He's probably taken care of one or more of their animals over the years, and he took care of our dog Doodle, and we're grateful for that. And so welcome aboard, Paul. Why don't you tell us about yourself a little bit, and we'll get started.
Okay, well, it's good to be here. This sounded interesting. I am retired. Actually, this is my 50th year as a veterinarian. I have a class reunion coming up in a couple weeks.
Congratulations.
And I've been in Grayling since 1976. When I graduated, I went to Alaska for 3 years, worked in Anchorage, and then came back to Grayling, where I always wanted to be. Just by luck, my partner, Dr. Kassler, had started a practice while I was gone and wanted somebody else because he was tired of working so hard. So I came in, and we got along well, and he retired in the early 2000s. And I've been there since. I sold my practice in 18 and worked till 2020. When I kind of officially retired, but was back at the office again during COVID for a week or so when they had trouble with people, and been doing a little bit of work with veterinary students the last 2 years, mentoring them in some surgery stuff that they don't have a chance to get in school. And they have a trap, neuter, release program for cats, and so these students get a chance to do surgery on these cats. And it's fun coming in to do that. I've got one coming another week or so for a day, but that's kind of what I've been up to. I had both Grayling Hospital for Animals and the Roscommon Veterinary Clinic while we were here.
It's pretty cool that you get to still mentor some youngsters and
it is.
Kind of pass it forward.
Yep, I like it. It's I just come in and try to give them some new ideas, tell them, you know, when you go back to school, do it the way they told you, but we'll look at some other options. And if you want to try things, let's try them. We'll just give you a shot to learn to be surgeons and get a chance to get your hands into that and see how well you do. And we've had some that have never done anything and had them going pretty good. Within a couple of them, we had some groups there for 3 weeks. And they made a lot of progress. And so,
well, I'm thinking it would be good to, I'm not going to say experiment, but to be able to put your mind in a situation where you've got to think critically and be willing to and able to adapt quickly to something that maybe you didn't expect.
It is, and you don't get much of that while we're doing, but you get them comfortable with having their hands on things and doing things, and every now and then they make a mistake and you think, now what are you going to do? And there's smart kids that get into veterinary school and good learners, and usually it's been fun.
And repetition's your friend that way too.
Yes.
Well, that's a tough curriculum to get into, isn't it? I mean, it is not easy to get into vet school.
No, it isn't. You hear stories, there's more and more vet schools now, and I think when I started there were like 17, now there's into the 20s, I guess, in the United States. A lot of these students don't get in on their first try. They'll try a second, and I talked to a couple that finally got in on their third try. They really want to do it, and to me, it's been a wonderful profession. I can't think of anything else in retrospect that I would have rather done.
Not everybody can say that, Paul.
I know. I hear a lot of people, even some have been in veterinary medicine camp, but I've loved it, and I've never regretted it. So
I think that's great.
And I try to impress students with that, too, you know, to enjoy this. And, you know, some of them, I don't know, some people get caught up in how much money they make, can't make enough money, do this and that, and they miss out on the enjoyment of just doing what we're doing. And veterinary medicine is one of the most respected occupations when you see lists of things that people like. Sure. It's right up there near the top. And so it's a good occupation. Has been for me.
Did you do any large animal work?
Never, no.
Okay.
I jokingly say I wouldn't take care of anything that outweighed me.
So you leave that for Dr. Paul.
Yeah.
Well, no,
yeah.
That's a good way to do it. That's neat. So we try not to date our podcast too much, but we are at that point in the year where, in fact, yesterday I saw a few little splashes of red up in some of the trees. So a lot of guys are, cleaning their guns, going to shoots, getting warmed up for grouse and woodcock. Can you offer our listeners some best practices on how people can make sure that their dogs are taken well care of?
Sure. I think one thing, I'm a hunter, and my dogs are old now. I don't get out as much, but I used to hear a lot, the darn dog not doing what I want, blah, blah, blah. And then you find out the dog's not been in the woods yet. guys take their dog out first time, and neither the dog nor the hunter are in any kind of good shape. I think part of having your dogs doing well is the hunter being in good shape also. It's a two-way street. But getting the dog out early, getting him used to being in the woods, getting him in shape, just like any athlete has to get in shape, is the most important thing. And if you can get him out on birds and get him going so they start to listen, they know why they're there, you're going to have a better season than just being, come up from downstate, put the dog in the woods and go, oh, that darn dog not doing anything right. Well, dog doesn't know what to do.
The early season, if we're opening in late September, we still get a lot of warm days,
And that you have to be careful
hydration.
With. Again, for both the hunter and the dog, be careful with those temperatures. I don't see much heat stroke or anything, but pay attention. And hunt in the morning and hunt in the evening if it's going to be hot. Take the afternoon off. Everybody take a break. But don't push the dog. If the hunter's tired and hot, the dog's going to be tired and hot, and it's time to quit.
The dog's probably running three times as far or four times as far as the hunter's walking anyway.
And make sure you get him near water. Get water with you if you have to. I see a lot of guys now with water bottles. They just carry two or three water bottles with them and teach the dog to drink out of the water bottle. And most dogs get along with that pretty well. But that's the biggest thing is water and get them in the shade if it's getting too warm. Keep them in shape.
When we're getting as close as we are to the season start, maybe if folks haven't been working with their dogs, kind of ramp in slow, and I guess moderation is the key phrase, or
I think so, because once you get into bird season, you're out there going, and if you work them in slow, even downstate, they find places to take dogs if you're not if you're coming up here to hunt, but you're downstate, find dog parks, even get the dog out running. Get them used to doing that. Take them for long walks. That's good for both, and trying to get them in shape that way. It sometimes is difficult, and but you pay for that if you get up here and you haven't done it.
Sure.
Well, if you come up here and pay some guy $500 to go hunting with you, you want your dog to be performing as well as he can, right?
Yeah.
Kind of hold up your part of the bargain, yeah. Do many folks use supplements, glucosamine, chondroitin, or cosequin, or?
I'm not sure. We sold some. Glucosamine never worked for me. I had some arthritis. It helped my wife, and I think it's the same way with humans as dogs. Some of them, it seems to do some good. Others, it doesn't.
Not as much.
It doesn't hurt. I think it's worth a try, especially if you have some lameness or some arthritis problems. See if it helps the dog. But it's not an end-all, and it's not magic. It's worth giving a shot, and if the dog's doing better, fine. Use it.
Like everything else, don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, the preventative or a kind of a routine, you know, something to just give the dog as a, you know, prophylactic or...
Well, if they have problems, and, you know, I ran into this, where is I? A friend of mine was talking about, you know, his dog wake up in the middle of the night and be whining, and then he'd give, oh, I know, it was my guide on the river out in Montana. Dog woke up. I said, well, Bob, give the dog the pill before you go to bed. Do it as a preventative thing. He came back and said, you know what, dog's not getting me up anymore. I said, that's pretty simple.
Kind of a maintenance procedure.
You can, yes. It's not, those drugs aren't things you want to just use willy-nilly and all the time if you don't need them, but if you're hunting and you know your dog has a little arthritis or something, I don't think it hurts if you get something from your veterinarian that is prescribed and you know you're using the right dose, then that can make the dog feel a whole lot better, and I have no problem with that.
Are there any internal, I mean, if you just give this stuff routinely, are there any like kidney or liver or...
Some of them with some dogs.
Consequences?
You know, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, the NSAIDs, like our ibuprofen or aspirin, can cause human problems the same way. They, in general, don't, but every now and then you get an animal that doesn't do well on them. And that just happens, unfortunately. But you have to monitor that. A lot of those drugs do cause some kidney problems and can. And if the dog's not feeling well, and gastrointestinal problems, the other thing. Vomiting or anything after you start it, quit the stuff and see how it goes. But in general, most of them are pretty safe and very effective for pain and inflammation.
Doodle had joint problems. I mean, she had ACLs on both her back legs, but she was on what, Dasiquin?
Yeah.
Or a whatever Dasiquin equivalent is.
That's the supplement type thing. But then there's a lot of several now, and I don't even know what some of the newer ones might be, but the non-steroidals, Rimadyl was one of the first ones a lot of people used.
Rimadyl, I know the situation where it was prescribed Rimadyl and the dog damn near died. I mean, and it was almost pointed directly back to that drug.
Yeah.
You gotta be really careful.
It can happen, but it's rare.
Yeah.
And people can almost die from the stuff we take also.
Is it Rimadyl and NSAID?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, that was the first big one in veterinary medicine that came out.
What's the generic name for that?
Carprofen.
Carprofen, yeah.
Yeah. Well, along those lines, and I guess more actionable, if someone's out in the field and, you know, maybe their dog takes a bad step or something, are there anything other than just common sense first aid rules for the field?
As just a soft tissue injury, not a laceration or anything, or what?
Yeah, I mean, well, we've had a couple. I think from what I can tell, and I don't have a hunting dog. I have a couple of dogs, but they're not hunters. They are. But dogs getting into leftover razor wire dogs taking a misstep on a, you know, maybe stepping funny over a log or going into a little hole they didn't see or something.
Yeah.
So both.
Both, okay. The lacerations, they can be small to huge. In the field, or if you can't get into a veterinarian, the smaller little wounds, my first short hair, I had a laceration on her front leg right about where her dew claw would have been. I sewed it up. She chewed the stitches out. I sewed it up. She chewed the stitches out. I said, we're leaving it. Clean wounds heal. And I've seen some huge wounds that couldn't be sewn up that eventually healed down into a little scar.
I always carry, I've always put a vest on a dog, just stick pokes. I've seen
it's a
bad situation
space
there.
That. Yeah, good.
But I always carry a quick clot. Is that advisable?
I've not used it, but if it works and it can stop some bleeding, I don't see any problem with it.
Is that just
the powdery clotter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I carry as much myself as I do the dog.
Well, there's that, yeah. Well, it's just, I guess the thought there was, you know, maybe put a couple of things in whatever first aid kit you might carry for yourself. Think about your partner as
certainly,
well.
Certainly, you know, the vet wrap, the self-adherent type thing. It's not a tape.
The clingy
gauze
stuff.
Gauze pads. And, you know, most lacerations, if they're little, you can get along with cleaning them and keeping them clean. And I say clean wounds heal, but big stuff probably needs to be sutured. People nowadays are carrying staplers with them. I've never actually used staples, but for a real big wound in the field, if you can't get to a veterinarian, the biggest problem with some of those things is if they aren't cleaned well and then they're closed, well, then you're going to end up with a bad infection underneath that suture line.
For instance, you wouldn't want to, if your pet had a small laceration and you couldn't flush it in the field with some peroxide or something, don't be tempted to, you know, put some super glue on it. And
no, not, you know, let me see. And peroxide, one time maybe.
I don't know if that's the right
thing. Peroxide is an irritating product, and it'll foam up and get a lot of junk out, but continued use of it, I think, delays healing. I like just plain warm water. Warm water soaks. It's not sterile, but clean tap water is really going to cause you any problems, especially in the field or when you get back to camp. You want to get all the debris out of that, the seeds and sticks and twigs and things. And then, if you have to, I've always looked at hunting dogs as they only have like 2 months, September to October to November. And I'm not one that says, well, sutured, you got to keep this dog out of the woods for 2 weeks. That's not why the dog is up here. And I'm a little more liberal on something like that. Go ahead and give it a day or two, let things heal. And with muscle pulls and things, okay, lay the dog up for a couple days. Let things calm down. Put it on some medication. Then try it. And if it's not working, don't do it.
Don't give the inflammation a chance to slow down a little.
And there are a lot of things that they stumble, they twist, they pull things. And we do that to ourselves also. And
I'm the poster child for that.
And those dogs don't want to stop. They're going to go. And so we have to be a little careful. You don't aggravate the bad things. But if they're working and happy and you're happy, then keep going with it. But if the dog's showing obvious signs that it really hurts and they're coming up lame and they're not working, then lay them up, get them in, find out what's wrong with them, and try to get them back in the field as soon as you can.
I've had short hairs, and I've been told, and I understand from my personal experience, that these are tough, durable dogs. I mean, you got to hurt them in order to, they got to be hurt to be hurt.
And the other ones are labs. You know, you can do about anything to a lab, and they just say, let's go. We're ready to keep going. And, I think in general, most dogs are that way. Some breeds might be a little less.
But the same token, they don't like to be fooled with.
Yeah.
I mean, if they get a porcupine quill, you have to literally lay on them to get them out.
Yeah.
Or go to the emergency vet. But
you get into porcupine quills. So.
Well, that's a good segue.
Yeah, that's a big
one. It's not that we don't have those up here.
I was always fortunate. I only had all my dogs. I only had maybe 3 times my dogs got into a porcupine, and they just had a few in the end of their nose, and I could pluck them out in the field. But the biggest thing we see is these dogs, that if they're just a mass of quills, and owners try like the devil to get quills out, and they work 3 or 4 hours, then they finally bring the dog into the veterinarian, and they got a bunch of now broken off quills because they weren't getting them out. They fought.
The dog's
got to
be a mess by then.
And the dog's a mess. There's buried quills. And if you would have brought the dog in right away, it probably wouldn't have cost you $30, $40 more than you're paying to get the last 15 or 20 quills out that you can't get at. I've seen all kind of contraptions that they do to keep dogs from biting them and stuff, but it hurts. I mean, I've stuck myself with them just pull it out a little bit, and it hurts. So,
well, is there, at one point I heard, it's probably an old wives' tale, so salt, salt, salt.
Okay, yeah.
But someone said or read or whatever that if you cut the quill, the air sac within the quill will deflate, making its removal easier?
No.
I'm still thinking the barb's an issue at the end of the quill.
You're right, 100%. Absolutely not. And that gets back into, you cut it, and then it breaks off. It's too, you can't get a hold of it. It doesn't help at all. I've played with it with dogs that were underanesthetic, and the end of the quill is not really hollow anymore. There's a lot up back. That's one of the big mistakes people make. Just
okay. Well, good. We can dispel that one right
yes,
away.
It's like a hollow fly rod. It's not hollow all the way to the tip.
Yeah. Okay. There you go.
There you go.
So quills, yeah, they're painful. They're best done unless there's just a few. If you got a few in the end of the nose and the dog doesn't want to be handled, you can tie a muzzle around there. Just a piece of gauze, a piece of rope, loop it under, loop it on top. Just nobody wants to get bit, but some dogs you just aren't going to get this done. They start to see the pliers coming, and they're already jerking away. And
eyes are spinning.
Yeah, and it's not worth it. And the real bad ones, you're never going to get them all. Just a good example of what can happen. I think we've had one that had quills all the way, and these are dogs that usually get loose and come back 2 days later. Quills penetrate into the chest.
Ooh.
And cause pneumonia, and it's killed some dogs.
Ooh.
With that.
Ooh.
So that one thing, when veterinarians do pull quills, they examine the dog. They check the joints. A veterinary friend of mine, his dog got into one not too long ago, and I got this secondhand, but he had some problem with his eye shortly after, so they ultrasound it and they found a quill behind the globe of the eye. And our other good friend is a veterinary ophthalmologist, and he said, I'm not going to try to do it. They end up taking this dog to Iowa. There's one veterinarian that has a microscope, and he went in and got that quill out from behind that dog's eye. They can cause a lot of problems, and you just don't blow them off. Joint problems can be there. If quills get in the joints, then you're going to tear a joint up that way, and you're going to end up with arthritis.
Well, that's
and
like
stuff.
Hardwired gout.
Yeah. So when they're under anesthetic, you can examine all that stuff and make sure you do the best. And even with that, some of them get left in because they're already broken off by the dog. And a good share of them will abscess out. They'll just, or they'll work through and pull. You can pull them out from the other side if they're in the lips. It's a tough fight with a dog. Some dogs, you're just not going to get it done, and then it gets harder and harder. So
the first time Doodle got hit, we got him out
here,
but the second time there was no going back.
Yep.
I mean, no, that was straight to the ER.
Yeah,
She learned that she didn't fool around with porcupines because there was one out in the yard and she got it within about 10 steps of it and turned around.
Realized maybe that's not as much fun as it looks.
Right? Yeah, we don't, those guys.
Some of that is breed related. In my mind, the big aggressive shepherds, Rottweilers, those dogs are going to kill that damn thing no matter what happens.
Right.
The milder dogs go, ooh, that hurt. I think I'll back off. And if you're lucky, you've got one of those mild-mannered ones who, because what a lot of them do, that porcupine, I don't know if you've ever looked, but if you walk up to one, you're never going to see its face. They got their tail to you, and they're swinging their tail. They don't throw quills, but dogs get their nose in there.
Well, yeah, there's not a launch mechanism.
No, there's
on
no
porcupine.
They're not poisonous. They don't get thrown.
Patriot missile porcupine.
And the other good one is, porcupine attacked my dog. Oh, really?
Is that so?
Yeah. That was a mean porcupine.
Like that rabbit that went after Jimmy Carter.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So that doesn't
jumped
happen.
Right
but dogs are nosy, and they look at, and so they, the mild-mannered ones get hit with that tail, and they get those quills in their nose, and they go, ow, that hurt. I'm out of here. But those big ornery dogs that are fighters and stuff, they just keep going back and going back. Pain stimulates them, I think.
Same with our Zoe. She's a chocolate, and she a couple of years ago, she came back with, I think, three or four, and we were able to pop them out. But she was done after that.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay.
Yeah. If you're going to try to get them right down as close to the skin as you can. And get them out that way, not grab them from the other end.
We got
then you'll
really
break them
super
off.
Lucky.
Yeah.
Leslie was able to pluck them out, but But, you know, Richard, you mentioned the vest. That's another, I think, maybe underutilized piece of equipment.
Yeah, I've never used one, but I'm starting to see them. And that's a good point with the sticks and things. Dogs are jumping over stumps and logs. And we have seen dogs with pretty long sticks jammed up in and broken off.
We were hunting up just the other side of the river with Bob Marsrow one day and his dog. His fetter took one right in the chest. I mean, it was a nasty wound.
Yeah.
And that, so I've always, I go to school on that and I put a vest on my dogs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a good idea. It's nice to have a vest on them all the way around to see them, but if it's hot, that's a problem also. They'll just overheat if it's hot weather. But,
I was up to Jay's last week and picked up, just to pick up some shells, but it's not plastic, but there seems to be something else that almost gives it a skid plate, like, you know, instead of just the cloth.
Yeah,
it almost seemed like there was a reinforced layer in there, too. It's interesting.
I haven't gone to SWAT gear yet.
tactical gear for your hunting dog.
Happy enough with canvassing.
Yeah. It's good grief. Yeah, probably not. The more I thought about it, because it was not one of those top of mind things, it's like, oh, well, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And get back to, you know, your original thing about preparing for season, making sure dogs are vaccinated. Lyme disease is in Michigan. I still don't think it's bad, and I have finally started to vaccinate my dog for Lyme, and I was talking to the veterinarians at our office, and they've started. It's been moving in from the west coast of Michigan, and it almost stopped at Kalkaska County for some reason. I've been to a couple lectures, and it may have changed now, but I asked the person, they go out and they try to find ticks, and they scan areas, and then they check them for Lyme.
Should have been here in May. Yeah.
They, at that point, a couple years ago, had not found a Lyme tick in Crawford County. And I said, why? And she said, I don't know. She said, I've been trying like crazy. For some reason, I can't find ticks that have the Borrelia in them. Now, that may be changed. And
so it's that vaccine part of the, just obviously it's not part of the ordinary battery of stuff you get.
No, it's not. You know, the average house dog that doesn't go out in the woods, I don't think needs it.
And you need to ask for it.
Yeah, but if you have a, or if you just walk your dog in the woods a lot.
Well, I mean,
oh yeah,
the dog runs here, 20 acres here. Yeah,
yeah. There's ticks all over here. The dog in the city doesn't. But if you're going to bring your dog up to hunt, I think nowadays probably Lyme disease is a good vaccine also to have.
I'm reluctant to ask that question because it's probably a result of me not paying attention more than not being.
Well, and for a while we didn't, and
but that's above and beyond the.
General the category.
Flea and tick that you would feed every other month or whatever.
Yeah, and yeah, you should have that because.
That's not Bravecto or Sentinel's not covering for that.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what is and what isn't. I use the one called Bravecto because it's good for 3 months because I don't remember.
Okay.
Every 3 months I can get, I can remember that.
Yeah, I can write that on a calendar and put an alarm on it.
Yeah. And actually, I got a reminder from the office to come in and get. Bravecto
tablet. There you go.
They're doing that. And that's a good flea and tick product. There's lots of good flea and tick products out there.
Yeah, we're not
using them.
We're not receiving any compensation for anybody. Yeah. We're just talking
about
just common remedies.
Names that you guys might know.
And
We might be welcome for. Doesn't mean we wouldn't.
So, and general vaccinations, distemper, parvovirus. We were talking earlier about the parvovirus last year, I guess it was, that people thought there was some brand new disease that had come out and it was acting like parvovirus. Well, Michigan State's lab, which is an international lab, came back and said, nope, just plain old parvovirus. It's not a different strain. But it probably all came about because of COVID. A lot of people went and got dogs. They weren't going to get appointments easily or didn't even think their dogs needed anything. And so we ended up with a lot of dogs that were not protected, and that's when things start to go bad again. And it came probably out of some shelters or something, and then dogs that weren't protected got it. So, but as far as I know, there weren't any well-vaccinated dogs that got sick from it. It could, you know, could be an odd one, but because no vaccine's 100% for every animal, sure. Just like with humans. But yeah, that was parvovirus, and parvovirus is a nasty disease.
Well, indeed, but good Lord, the stories that people were putting forward were
I heard a few
stuff
of, those
of science stuff. Fiction.
Yeah.
Yes. It was very interesting. Yeah, everything short of aliens, but yeah. Yeah. Well, wait, what else good just general day-to-day best practice tips for pet owners in our locale? Because it's a little bit different than living in the city.
Well, especially if flea and tick things are good. We've talked about that. Vaccinations, that's anywhere, wherever you're going to take your dog. Up here, dogs in the woods, Lyme vaccine. And two of the bigger problems for everything in veterinary medicine is obesity and dental disease. And obesity is a problem in the United States. So, you know, we deal with that, and we love our dogs, and we think, oh, you know, we have to feed them. Like, I remember my grandmother. I never went over there, and I didn't get stuff, pies, cakes. But keeping dogs trim. But the other one, dental disease is a huge problem, and a lot of people pass it off. The smaller breeds, for owners, tend to have worse problems earlier. The Yorkies and the little dogs, there are a lot of those dogs that have lost all their teeth by the time they're 9, 10 years old. But the big dogs, it happens later. You look in a dog's mouth, and that's part of getting an annual exam every year, as far as I'm concerned, having your dog looked at for oral disease, looked at for skin bumps and lumps, looked at for arthritis, looked at for anything unusual, just like we should get our exams.
So, on the dental thing, these the dental, the biscuits, the tooth, Milkbone, they have one, there's a 50 of them out there. Are they effective at all, or do we actually need to manually?
An adjunct. The absolute best thing that even I admit it, I didn't do it, was brushing your dog's teeth every day, just like you do yourself.
And my wife does.
Because the process is the same in our mouth as in the dog's.
Well, they get tartar.
And they get tartar, and then the tartar builds up and causes gingival recession, and then you get infection underneath the gums, then you get bad teeth, and you can't always tell that just by looking in the mouth. But if there's a lot of tartar and stuff going on, getting them clean, scaled and polished, and they have to be under anesthetic to do a good job and get x-rays taken and everything that's necessary. But then bad teeth can cause pain. And even in a hunting dog, you know, if you got a dog that you're dependent on retrieving, if it's got all of a sudden some abscesses or something, and the dog doesn't know how to pick that bird up anymore, it may be something like that, not psychological, but just pain. And it wasn't unusual when we did, especially the little dogs. You try to get owners to get their dog in, get them cleaned, and they wait, and finally they go, their biggest reason they can't stand the smell. The dog looks like a sewer. You get those teeth cleaned, you extract all the teeth that need to be extracted, and they come back a month later and say, God, I wish I'd have done that a long time ago. That dog's acting like a puppy again. And so we know it's painful. It hurts. But dogs don't, they're stoic, and they don't tell us it hurts. Like we can say, oh, I got a sore tooth. That doesn't happen. You can start to tell sometimes by the way they're eating and things like that. But that's one good reason for annual exams, is get the mouth examined. And if there are bad teeth, get them extracted. We don't have to put dentures in or anything like that. But the little dogs with no teeth get along fine, and they'll eat hard food. I don't know. They just kind of swallow it. So it's not that it's going to be a problem for the dog. It's going to be helpful for the dog.
So we had a bunch of, like, finger cots with some...
Yeah, you can use that. They make a little brush, and even just a gauze pad dampened and rubbed along the gum line every day is going to help disturb that soft stuff to keep it from turning into tartar. And it won't be 100%, because we brush our teeth every day and we still get our teeth cleaned. So it's not an end all, but those things can delay the cleaning, delay the need for it, and save the owner's money at the same time.
Yeah, maintenance, a precautionary thing, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I'm thinking as long as that's getting done while the dogs under anesthesia get the nails done too.
Oh yeah, that's just an automatic. Whenever at our offices, when dogs are under anesthesia, they got their nails trimmed.
All right, I got to ask this question. I've had, all of our dogs have been, the doodle wouldn't even, she didn't want anybody to even touch her feet.
Yeah.
She was really just, it was like a phobia. So her doing her nail was, she went to see you or the groomer or somebody. And now this next one is she doesn't mind you touching her feet, but if she sees a pair of clippers, even them $95 clippers that's got the little light on it, green, 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 red, throw them away because you can't get close to her.
Yeah,
she just goes nuts. So is that unusual or?
I know a lot of dogs, and part
that's,
of them
that's every other week at our house.
It takes one or two times getting one too close and hurting, and then for sure they don't want to have it done.
Yeah, you get into the quick once and it's all over.
One of the best drugs I think we found in the offices that we had is peanut butter. And you take the dog away from the owner, you got somebody to hold the dog, somebody with a wooden spoon with peanut butter, and somebody cutting the nails, and they get it done a lot easier than wrestling and fighting. It doesn't work for every dog. Or cheese, that squirt cheese you can put on something and distract the dog. And that's how they do it, and I would guess a lot of veterinary offices do that. You got to distract them, but there's some dogs, doesn't matter what you do.
I just thought they were like magicians or something.
Yeah, it's kind of like
my wife showed me a social media thing, and I don't see a whole lot of social media, but I did see this and made me laugh really hard. This woman took Saran wrap and wrapped it around her head and took a big glob of peanut butter and stuck it on her forehead and came up to the dog and trimming the dog while the dog's just eating peanut butter off her head.
Yeah. Distraction's the best thing when you're trying to do nails, I guess.
We found that they're a little better with the Dremel tool.
I've never used one, and they don't use them at the office, but they have. They look like it's a good idea. You're not
as long as you
squeezing
don't
that thing hard.
Keep it. You got to kind of do the bounce thing, so that the heat doesn't build up. Exactly. Yeah.
I got two of these.
I actually use my Dremel.
And I found that they work perfectly for dressing snake guys to put on runs.
Oh, there you go.
I mean, worth it.
Yeah.
Well, my dogs anyway. They're
oh, take the little nasties off of them and make them nice.
Kind of a failure for the nails, but they work great for snake guys.
Okay.
Excellent.
Okay.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, what else should we thinking about?
If it's in your first aid kit, that is an eye wash. You can get lots of different eye flushes. You know, there are 12-ounce bottle with a kind of an idea that, and flush the dog's eyes out after hunting every day. I've seen people that are just rabid about it and others that just kind of look, or if you see something in the eye, that's sometimes an easy way to get something out. And they don't hurt. Most of them are designed to squirt in your eye. Mm-hmm. And you just have to hold the dog. But if you can hold the eye open and flush the eye out, get seeds and things out, that's a good thing. Because there's that third eyelid that lays up against the eye. And they will get things behind those. And if you flush it out and you get an eye that's still red and irritated and the dog's pawing at it, don't let eye problems go more than 24 hours. If they're not clearing up, then those need to be checked right away because they can cause ulcers.
You don't want to get something up and in there that
it's like
be
you
hard
just
to
get an
down.
Eyelash. It bothers you, and you think I've taken parts of cat's toenails out from behind a dog's eyelid where the cat swatted and there's a piece there. But a lot of times it's seeds, grass-ons, things like that, that get caught in there and they don't just flush out because they're hanging in. And the other thing then, if you've got a red eye and you flush it out good, it doesn't hurt to put an artificial tear in there, just a general artificial tear as a lubricant, just to make the eye feel better. I don't like it.
Is that fluid just a little more viscous than a wash? Or
you can get it all sorts of. There's one that has different, there's real heavy, like it's almost a gel. And then there's the milder one that is probably just a little more viscous than an eye wash. So
is this like OTC stuff, like or?
Yep.
It doesn't have to be veterinary.
I can't remember the name of the one that I've recommended, but they have three or four different levels of thickness. But they're all over the counter type things. The eye wash is over the counter, and you'll see just any kind of lubricant.
So would you put these eye drops in at night, or is this just hour?
Night would be good. If the eye's inflamed, two or three times a day, it's not going to hurt.
Oh, okay.
It just keep it down. But again, if you're doing that and it's not working, I really don't like to see eyes go very long without being examined, because you can get into a real lot of trouble if you try. And if you got your own antibiotic, well, maybe that's okay. Some of them have steroids in them, and that's not okay if there's an ulcer present.
Right.
So,
right.
Eyes are really something that I really feel strongly about getting looked at if things aren't clearing up really fast for you. If you get the greenish yellow stuff coming out, that's an infection in the eye. Eyes, tears are meant to clean the eye. So you'll get a little stuff on the medial side of the eye by the nose, that grayish, gooey stuff.
We get the little sleepers.
And that's dust and stuff that's being washed out the way it's supposed to be. But if you start to get greenish yellow inflammation going with it, they need to be checked. They need to be checked right away as far as I'm concerned.
Makes sense.
Makes perfect sense. So have you been out tromping around scouting your spots?
My dog's 15 and she's laid up, so I've not been out yet. I just got back from a fishing trip in Montana.
I'm
looking up other people to go hunting with.
Did you have
fun?
Now.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. We had a good time.
Are you guys going back out this fall?
No, not fishing.
Bert, where you go?
To North Dakota pheasant hunting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Doing that in end of October.
Nice. Yes.
The guide's dog, so I don't. Those are vacations for me. I used to leave my dog home instead.
I'm maybe preaching to the choir, or maybe mouthing heresy, but traveling with a dog is not all that much fun.
No, I agree. And when you're staying in motels, or even if you got to put it in the kennel, and you got to get up, and you got to do all this, and sometimes it's I just left the dog home and enjoyed the hunt. wasn't trying to take care of my dog. I was letting somebody else take care of him.
If you're going to hunt with a guide, the guide will have dogs.
And those dogs know what they're doing.
You're paying this guy a crap load of money.
Yeah.
Don't go hunting with you. Might as well use his pups.
When we go in North Dakota, they just assume you didn't bring your dog, because they are no bells, no whistles, no beepers, no noise, no yelling at your dog. Well, there aren't too many of the dogs I see, private hunters, that can do that, because those birds are really jumpy, and you get out of the car, even around here, close the door and pheasants are flushing. And I saw it one day. I was with a guy, had his own dog, and the guy said, "Get your dog back here," and he just hit the beeper just to beep it. A bunch of birds too far from them were gone. So
the leader shy equivalent of birding.
That makes sense, because those fields are probably trafficked pretty heavy in terms of hunters.
Doesn't take long.
I mean, that's a risk. That's a revenue generator, so they hit it as often as they can.
Cash
crop.
I used to do some wild quail hunting at a research project, and they had radios on some of those birds, and they knew where they were, and they knew if you got out of the car and did something wrong, you could see birds flushing way away already.
It's like here. The season opens as early as it does.
Mm-hmm.
By the time it gets around to the time, it makes sense to be hunting, the leaves are down and it's cooled off enough. The coverts have been stomped through and grouse didn't. I think the grouse up here tend to run more than they don't flush like they used to.
It's kind of like blind fishing before the hatch comes in. It's just can be really counterproductive.
I'm here and I got a fishing rod, I'm going to fish, damn it.
That's right. I don't care if there's fish rods or not.
Here I got a gun and a dog, I'm going to hunt.
Yeah.
I'm going to beat them out of the water.
It's hard to argue with that if you've traveled 600 miles.
Another one thing that is worth mentioning, I think wasp stings, insect bites, and dogs getting allergies and swollen up if they come back. Benadryl's a good drug. You buy it over the counter. You use a tremendously large amount more for dogs than we could take.
Oh, really?
You know, we use a milligram per pound for dogs. So you got a 50-pound dog, he's taking 225 capsules, probably knock you and me out for the afternoon.
Oh, no kidding.
And so, and that doesn't even make dogs sleepy, typically.
Okay.
But it's always been a full milligram per pound, so 25-pound dog gets a 25-milligram Benadryl capsule. And you see that occasionally, and that's an easy one over the phone. I didn't hesitate to talk to people about giving it some Benadryl first. If it doesn't work, then you may want to get something else done.
Dandy got hit by a ground wasp or hornet or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
She came in, and she just, within 30 minutes, she was going nuts. She was just hives.
Yeah.
Really severe. And, we hit her. Benadryl took it away.
Yep.
And then within an hour and a half, it was clear.
Yeah.
Are ground wasps a larger concern in this geography than in others?
I don't know about others. I've run into them a couple times. You know, dogs keep right on running, and we can't run that fast, I'm sure.
Right?
It's probably more of a problem for the hunter than the dog, but they'll get them too, like your dog, like you say. Well, they certainly can get blown up. And I think some dogs react differently to those than others. Just like some dogs react differently to fleas. People react differently to fleas and insects. I don't think they're all necessarily allergic to those things.
Well, I typically carry a couple of Benadryl with me just because I'm a little sensitive to bee stings and stuff. And on the off chance I get, you know, I'd rather have it right away than be miserable for a while.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a simple drug to have around, and it's a darn safe one.
Well, and the stuff you've mentioned, it's not like, you know, this isn't a 50-pound rock that you're throwing over your shoulders to go into the field just exclusively for pet care.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's a couple little lightweight, few ounces on your belt. And
I looked up dog canine first aid kits. I Googled it. Well, you can get everything from $16 to $200 in a dog kit. Some of them say they're a little pack that'll fit in your vest. Others are a bag that you got to carry around.
Inflatable air spoons.
You know, people can do all the different things they want. A good share of those, I think, the drugs, if there are any drugs in there, they have, you know, things like topical anesthetic or antibiotic cream. You can use that a few times if you got it, but from everything I've read, most of the time after they've been on about three times under bandage, everything under there is resistant to that particular antibiotic ointment anymore. It's a good thing to keep lubricating the wound with, maybe, so bandages don't stick to it. But plain old Vaseline
It works for people too, I think.
Yeah. And I've used it on myself with cuts and things, but after about 3 days, I just quit it because I don't think it's really doing you much good anymore.
And when I went to the doctor, and he says, quit using it.
Yeah.
And I said, well, and he said, quit using it.
Yeah.
Okay, message received.
No, like now.
Get resistant bugs to that.
Nice.
That's good to know. But, you know, first aid is, I don't know, people really think about it. You look at a dog and he's got, you know, a vest and a $600 Carmen collar on and a bell and booties and all the rest of this stuff. And, it's just first aid stuff. You know, you hope that, you know, that care and preparation extends to having first aid stuff in the pocket, too.
It helps, you know, and it doesn't have to be huge amounts of anything. I count first aid as the eyewashes, but that's just a general.
But still, just a couple ounces of that and a little plastic bottle's not too.
It's got a kind of a fine nozzle, so you get a spray that actually does some flushing.
It'll irrigate
action
it.
There.
Yeah.
And some vet wrap and some 4x4 sponges, and that'll get you out of the field, clean it up, and if it's a small wound, an inch or so, you can go in and get it sewn up and, like, with me, the dog's probably going to chew them out anyways. They just aren't real good about leaving things like that alone.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I say, well, going to have to hunt that way. We'll clean it up every day when we get in.
I always might have a My worst case scenario is in these areas out here where they've cut and left the stuff on the ground, and you know, it's really hard to walk through, and the dog gets the dog injured herself or himself, and he can't walk anymore, and you got to carry him out.
Yeah.
That's my idea of a worst case scenario.
Yeah, I ran into that up in the ranges one day, a big coil of concertina wire. I went in and just, actually, I think I dragged something out and took it back to the camp. I said, here, you can have this stuff. You left it in the woods.
Oh, good for you.
And grateful?
Yeah.
I'm sure they were super happy. Yeah.
Well, we had a guy came into the shop last fall, and his dog cut himself up on some razor wire over by Lost Lake. And it was a disappointing reaction from the authorities.
Yeah.
Well, it was just borderline comical, but yeah, it's... You got to be mindful of that. If you're on any of that shared land, just be aware, because, I mean, John's dog was, what, 40 yards out of the truck, if that?
Yeah. Yeah, and that stuff is, stuff is designed to hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And they're sharp. They're nasty. Other thing we haven't talked about is skunks.
Oh.
Oh, wow. See?
Yeah, so.
You did come prepared. That's great.
They're awful things. There are some products. I know I used to carry one with me in the car. I never had to use it. The veterinary offices have it called Skunk Off. There is now and I just checked with at the office, and they said, Nature's Miracle, it's an over-the-counter, Nature's Miracle Skunk Odor Remover, which apparently is kind of like the Skunk Off product. You can buy that and keep a bottle of that with you. If you're at home, there is a formula for making it up, and I just wrote it down here because I can never remember it. But let's see, 3%, a quart of 3% fresh hydrogen peroxide. If you're going to use peroxide for anything, that's another thing we'll talk about. But fresh hydrogen peroxide, a quarter cup of baking soda, and 1 to 2 teaspoons of Dawn dish soap are a fairly good way. Product to make up at home to wash your dog down with, then rinse them good with it. So again, it's a quart of fresh hydrogen peroxide, or pretty fresh, quarter cup of baking soda, and 1 to 2 teaspoons of Dawn dish soap.
Dawn seems to be at the root of many things. Yes,
probably any detergent dish soap. This came out of University of Nebraska.
My experience is Dawn is a good product.
Yeah, I mean,
it cuts grease and it cleans shit.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And if your Dawn people hear that, we gratefully accept the check.
Yeah.
And then I mentioned the other thing. If a dog gets into something you think is toxic, you came home and ate the whole package of kids' chocolate candy, hydrogen peroxide is a pretty good product to get them to vomit. And the way I usually, there are, I guess somebody's probably got different amounts, but I mixed peroxide about 50-50 with water, maybe a couple tablespoons for a bigger dog. I have read, though, if you get the dog maybe to eat something first, just like bread, having something in the stomach we'll get that reaction for them to vomit.
Get the foaming.
Milk or bread or both, and then use the peroxide orally in the mouth. And if you do that, wait 15, 20 minutes, try it one more time. If it doesn't work, then if you think it's something bad, you got to get them in. But that's a good initial thing to get them to vomit. And it does do a pretty good job. That's where you need the fresh stuff for sure, though, or good recent stuff.
Yeah, bad stuff is like chocolate, raisins, grapes.
Your pills, somebody's medication they may have gotten into, all kinds of things dogs will get into.
I'll tell you, that's one of those surprises that you don't think about it, but it does happen quite often where you may be filling up your pill case or whatever you call it. And then all of a sudden, you've got a pill on the floor, and you've got a dog, doing something not great.
And then you talked about the Rimadyl causing sickness. Those are really good tasting tablets, and dogs will get those things down and eat a whole bottle of them. That's dangerous. Given at the right dose, it almost never a problem, but that doesn't mean that's what's going to happen. Or the little dog gets a couple of the big dog's pills. Mm-hmm. Lots of different scenarios you could look at that you may want to say, you know, we ought to try to get this dog to vomit and get that out of there. Peroxide does a pretty good job.
All right. It'll probably work on people, too.
Mike. No doubt. Well, good. Well, I think you've set us up.
Good.
With a lot of great ideas and good information on getting ready for the fall and just in having your pet in general. So thank you.
You're
welcome.
Thanks for coming around.
Very much obliged.
Thanks for asking. It's
well, look, there's a happy little dog at the door.
Yeah. Let me in.
He sends us a friendly vet. Oh, great. Thanks again, sir. Much obliged.
Good. Thank you. Appreciate
it. Have a great season in the woods.
Yeah, I hope to.
All right. And listeners, thanks. We'll talk to you soon.
Good fun. Paul's a great guy and some good information. So bear that in mind. Have fun. Enjoy. I think we're going to have probably a couple other grouse-related guests and, of course, a couple of trout-related guests. So stick with us. We'll be back next week with another entertaining edition. Until then, mind your back cast.